Hi, this is Arnie Arneson, and this is the Wednesday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson and producer Fred Portnoy. So a friend of mine lives in Ames, Iowa. And my friend in Ames, Iowa, saw this article at The Guardian, and she said, you've got to read this article. It's so depressing, but so beautifully written, and it really describes sort of the life we're living, the fear we're experiencing, and what it's like in places in the Midwest, like Iowa. And the person who wrote the piece is named Art Cullen. He is the editor of the Storm Lake Times in Northwest Iowa, where he won the Pulitzer Prize for writing editorials on agriculture. He is a Guardian U.S. columnist and the author of the book, Storm Lake, Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland. So let me first welcome Art to the program. How are you, Art?
Great. Thanks for having me, Arnie.
Well, when she sent me that
note, from Iowa, Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, I've gone to St. Olaf, you know, and my daughter went to the University of Iowa. So I feel like I have a connection to the Midwest in so many ways. It's unbelievable.
How about you?
That's right. Every time I talk about St. Olaf, I go, yeah, sure, you betcha. So there you go. The title of your piece at The Guardian was as follows. Trump must win the Midwest, but out here, his breezy reelection gambit falls flat. We're more concerned about drought, economic uncertainty, and COVID than right-wing talking points about crime and socialism. Now, Art, this piece is so powerful and so incredibly well-written. I want you to read it because you paint a picture, and not that I don't trust you verbally, but you paint a picture and you bring in so many points that I want people to see the picture you painted at The Guardian, because when I got done, I was almost in tears, and yet I also understood the level of frustration. And I want people to understand why I so emotionally reacted to your piece the same way my friend in Ames reacted to the piece, because you're a great writer, and I want people to understand you paint remarkable pictures with words. And this is a picture that really, I think, doesn't just describe what's going on in the Midwest, but it sort of describes the sort of sick feeling so many of us have, and you did a phenomenal job of describing it.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. You're welcome. So I'm going to ask you to read it, and I may interrupt you. That's my privilege, but I want you to read it because I think it's incredible. Start from the top, and you'll have to tell us what the word D-E-R-E-C-H-O is.
Derecho.
Derecho. Okay. I'd never heard that term.
Neither had we until just recently.
Oh, good. Well, then I feel better because I literally had to look it up because I'm like, what the hell is this? So
yeah,
start with that sentence.
It was invented by some guy from the University of Iowa in the 1880s. Apparently, there was a strong wind, and he called it derecho, which in Spanish means straight wind, versus tornado, which is, you know,
a circular. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Straight wind. Okay. Derecho is a straight wind. Thank you so much.
It's dry. So dry that my neighbor Steve Dre, the tractor parts man who hears it first, figures that the combines might start rolling through the brown corn in just a week or two. Some farmers are cutting corn for livestock silage, and it's punky. 150 bushels per acre should catch a lot of it around Storm Lake, Iowa, which is in severe drought along with much of the Corn Belt. That's a 25% yield chop off expectations. It makes farmers itch to get after it before the paper dry corn falls to a freak wind. A hurricane like derecho, that's Spanish for straight line wind, flattened 14 million acres in the tall corn state just a couple weeks ago. This is corn prices are at their lowest point in a decade.
Now, let me just repeat that it flattened 14 million acres.
That's 14 million in Iowa.
And oh, my God.
Nebraska to Indiana, 50 miles wide.
Oh,
for 700
God.
Miles.
Visually, I can't even imagine it, but I saw that sentence and I'm like, oh my God. All right, keep going. But I want people to understand 14 million acres were laid flat. This is like an
corn
incredible
and soybeans blown over.
All right, keep going.
Or as we say in Iowa, blowed over.
Blowed over. Okay, keep going.
The cicadas of late August called children back to school where vulnerable teachers and staff awaited them. most come from meatpacking households, Latino, Asian, and African, whose breadwinners were ordered into close working quarters in April by a president who demanded slower virus testing. We were among the hottest spots in the land. The infection rate shot up in the college town as the students returned. Governor Kim Reynolds ordered the bars shut down in six of the state's 99 counties. She sailed to election in 2018, but has since watched her numbers slide as her mind melded to Trump's. Our virus rate refuses to recede. 14 teacher aides in Storm Lake quit just before classes resumed for fear of infection. The governor ordered everyone back to class, but didn't tell schools how to do it. Our superintendent begged patience. She regrets saying, "I just don't know," so often when asked how to pull this off safely.
I'm going to stop you here, Art. And the reason I want to stop you here is twofold. So she shuts the bars down in six of the state's 99 counties. Did that work?
Right.
I mean, you've got 93 other counties. You can go and grab a beer at a bar.
No, it doesn't work. And even the White House said, you've got to close down more counties. And outlined several more counties where the infection rates are way too high.
Unbelievable.
For example, Storm Lake is home to a meatpacking plant and a college and a community college, and it is not, and the bars are open.
I want people to hear this. What was she doing? How did she pick the six? What kind of a crapshoot was it? And you and I both know that, you know, six out of 99 is a joke. What you just described of your community tells you that you should have been on that list, if nothing else. But the question is, why were you not on the list? And then I want to go back to the paragraph before where you talk about, you know, the kids coming back to school and they come from meatpacking households. If
right.
I were a teacher and I knew where my kids' parents were working, I would be afraid of those kids. I would be afraid of those kids because you know they're not testing enough in the meatpacking plants. You know that COVID has been spread. You know they bring it home to their children. The children may not be showing signs of COVID, but they'll be coming to class. And guess what? If you're a teacher or a teacher's aide, you're going to be afraid of your children.
5% of the workers at 3,000 meatpacking workers in Storm Lake, 5% are tested every week. Just 5%.
Yeah.
There's no testing at the school, at the schools.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Again, that's why this piece is so powerful. Every time I read a paragraph, I wanted to hit a wall. because I was so upset. All right, keep going. You're at nobody does know. Keep going.
Nobody does know. The state last week acknowledged that it was disseminating faulty data about COVID infection as recently as July. The meatpacking industry is doing its own testing of employees on a selective basis. Deaths and hospitalizations have ebbed here. Children have their temperatures checked at the school door. We have no idea what the infection rate really is or how long we can conduct classes. Masks are not required, but everyone was wearing them in class here this week. The kids seem to get it. Grandma, who takes care of them after school, is nervous. Wow. It's shouting distance of Labor Day, when people normally start fixing on the elections. Labor is restless. John Deere laid off Davenport and Waterloo workers last fall and this spring. Deere reported strong profits last week as a result, despite slumping sales from the Trump trade wars. There's the disconnect between the stock market and Main Street. The Dow rises while enhanced unemployment benefits expire. Atop all this, a pandemic, a climate crisis inspiring a mega drought and derecho, rotten farm prices, and incompetent government, another unarmed black man was shot, this time in Kenosha, Wisconsin, not so far from Minneapolis, where George Floyd became a household name. Now it's Jacob Blake, whose mother, Julia Jackson, pleaded for prayer and healing on national TV for her son, for the police, for this nation. The Bucks and Brewers refused to play.
So let me just stop you here. So what you described, Jacob Blake's mom, that's what a leader sounds like.
Right.
She's asking for healing for her son, for the police, for this nation. And as we tape this right now, Art, you know where Donald Trump is. He's in Kenosha talking to the cops.
Right. And we did not want to talk with Julia Jackson,
exactly,
who is apparently one of the most reasonable people in Kenosha.
Exactly. That's why when you said that, I'm reading what she's saying and I'm thinking, oh my God, the contrast between her, where she has risen to the occasion, where she's thinking more about the stability and the security of everyone, and he is working the divide. He is working the divide no matter what the consequences are. It's just appalling. All right.
Trump simply must win Iowa and Wisconsin. So he cast a convention against this backdrop of schadenfreude. Godless looters are coming for years, and roped in our governor, former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, and Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa to play in the tragedy. Few were inclined to listen. When the corn calls, you're too busy removing fallen trees from your machine shed. Trump dropped into the Cedar Rapids airport for an hour shortly before the convention to promise assistance from the derecho that pulverized our second city. After he left, he approved homeowner and business relief for just one of the 27 counties that the governor had requested.
Let me repeat that sentence. Wait a minute, don't go on. After he left, he is Trump. He approved homeowner and business relief for just one of the 27 counties the Republican governor had requested. The Republican governor who spoke at the Republican convention. I just want people to understand, she asked for 27, he gave her one. And in your next paragraph, I think you say something about the fact that she says that Trump has your back. And I'm thinking, really, who's back?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Has your something anyway.
Yeah, exactly. All right, keep going. I was just, that number alone was like a mind blowing.
Yeah. For that, Governor Reynolds told the TV convention that Trump had our back.
Oh, God.
Senator Ernst, trailing Democratic challenger Teresa Greenfield in fundraising and polling, landed a primetime cameo to praise her fearless leader, the one who knocked down soybean prices, the one who helped the corn-fueled ethanol industry implode, the one who ordered children into cages to be separated from their mothers.
All right, so Art, you're from Iowa, so I'm going to put you on a couch because I feel like I need therapy, but I'm going to put you on the couch and say, so tell me, Art, why the hell did Joni Ernst do this? Why the hell did she do this? What is the upside for her? I mean, I'm looking at the polling numbers. I was looking at everything. I'm looking at what you just described in your article at The Guardian, and I'm trying to figure out who is the consultant that suggested she do this, or is she tired of politics and wants a way out?
Well, first of all, she is not a certified brain surgeon. And Mitch McConnell is doing the thinking for her and Chuck Grassley. Okay. And he's just telling them what to do. And if you want his money, that's what you do.
Wow.
And so that's what she does. And
but
she
doesn't he need that warm body? He doesn't to lose Joni. I mean, it's already a very slim margin that keeps the majority leader in power. And if Mitch McConnell is playing the long game, not the game for like an hour, then he wants Joni Ernst to look as appealing as possible in a state that's hemorrhaging. And what she did on during the Republican convention was not useful. And again, if I were running against Joni Ernst, I would remind everyone that her leader, when they were asking for 27 counties to get some sort of assistance from the federal government, you know, President Trump only managed to figure out how to support one. I mean, I would just slap everything against Joni, and I don't think it helps her. I think it only hurts her. And I think Mitch McConnell is cutting off his nose to spite his face.
Well, yeah. And I think there's a certain amount of hubris that's built up from power, and maybe Mitch McConnell doesn't get it. He might be in trouble in Kentucky himself.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. It's just, I'm reading all these things and I have 1,000 questions as to why are you doing this? What does this mean? And from the governor's perspective and Joni's perspective, they're attaching themselves to, you know what, and I can't use the word on the radio.
Yeah.
All right. Keep going. Farmers are anxious.
Farmers are anxious. Latinos are afraid. Unemployed machinists are frustrated. That prized demographic, suburban women from Urbandale next to Des Moines, are encouraging their school board to sue the governor over her in-person school orders. A few Latino organizers gathered in the park on the sweltering evening when Trump would commandeer the Rose Garden for his reality show. Our people came here to be free of the corruption and violence, said Storm Lake City Councilman Jose Ibarra. Now it's come back to find us. Where can we go? What can we do but vote?
Let me just repeat that again. That was one of the most poignant two sentences in your entire piece. And I'm going to read it too. A few Latino organizers gathered in the park on the sweltering evening when Trump would commandeer the Rose Garden for his reality show. Quote, "Our people came here to be free of the corruption and violence," said Storm Lake City Councilman Jose Ibarra. "Now it has come back to find us. Where can we go? What can we do but vote?" Oh my God, Art. That sentence made me sick. It made me sick because he knows what corruption is like. He understands violence. That's why they fled. That's why they came here. And what is he seeing in the streets, even in DC, in Kenosha, in Portland, all over the country? It's violence. And it's violence that's not being sort of tapped down, but being inspired by the man who's sitting in the White House.
Yeah, and this is what my father fought against in World War II.
Oh, God. It was an amazing sentence. All right, I'll stop. You only have a sentence left to go. Keep going.
They said their older folks who never saw a reason before have finally found one to vote. Even some of those farmers are wondering about Trump as they dig into a harvest so meager that wraps up as they vote. An ill wind blows for incumbents.
Oh my God, Art, you keep thinking about the fact that he can still win. You keep thinking about the fact that, you know, some people have drunk the Kool-Aid and no matter what happens, they still believe. But I think if what you're describing in Iowa is what is in effect and probably even worse by November, how do you vote for this man? How do you do it? Do you not care about your children? Do you not care about your future? Do you not want, I mean, what is safety and security if he's in office? Because he actually defines the opposite of both of those words.
Yeah, well, when you've kind of been under the boot for so long, you begin to believe your own stories. And a lot of people here do believe their own stories. They're so disaffected. And that's Trump's appeal. But he's in a dead heat in Iowa, which he won by 9 points 4 years ago, 3 years ago. I just saw, you know, yet another poll of Wisconsin showing him down 9 points in Wisconsin. So this is still a state that elected Barack Obama twice and Tom Harkin for about 30 years to the U.S. Senate. And Wisconsin remains a state that of La Follette that elected a gay woman to the U.S. Senate. Ohio may be lost, but I think Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa are by no means in the Trump camp, and they have to be poised to capture these states.
One of the lines I have to sort of share with you that I kind of borrowed one of your lines and I applied it to my Republican governor. And you wrote, and I'm going to go back to your article, "She sailed to election in 2018, but has since watched her number slide as her mind melded to Trump's." I saw that line and I hate to break it to you, but I said the same thing about my governor.
Yeah.
That my governor, Chris Sununu, may appear to be incredibly affable, but what you really need to know is that he is mind melded with Donald Trump, and be afraid and be warned. And I think that's what's so interesting about this whole, Trump has made it all about him, and therefore to distance yourself from him is virtually impossible, whether you're Joni Ernst or whether you're Mitch McConnell or whether you're Kim Reynolds. But when you begin to realize the consequences of being so wedded to Mr. Trump,
He's a tar baby, and they can't get away from him, and they can't get away from this this economy was deteriorating. The Midwestern manufacturing economy was deteriorating before the pandemic. It's just gotten worse. And the farmers have been losing money for 7 straight years, and these trade wars were going on before the pandemic, and they just destroyed agricultural export markets. And that has ripples throughout the Midwest, from heavy equipment to tractors, and this economy is imploding, and while the stock market booms.
But you have to add climate change, because climate change means you are facing extremes like you have never faced before. I mean,
absolutely.
That's where people, I keep telling people, we have 3 pandemics going on. We've got the pandemic COVID, we've got a pandemic of racism, and then we've got the pandemic of climate change. And each one of them takes you out at a different rate.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But in the end, they take you out. And the problem is that with the president, he's kind of a synergistic effect. So in some ways, he's actually speeded up the failure of all those pandemics. And that is the problem. And I have said this over and over again, Art, and since you're the writer in the family, I'm going to sort of share it with you. And I keep telling everyone that the pandemic is the economy. The pandemic is the economy. You will not fix anything. You will not open schools. You will not return the businesses. I mean, I don't know what's going on in Wall Street, but most of us don't play in Wall Street. You know, most of us still have to feed our families and pay the mortgage and try to figure out how to put gas in the car. And Wall Street doesn't do that for us. It doesn't do that for us. You know, and as a result, if we don't continuously connect the pandemic to the economy, then he sort of gets away with the idea that somehow he can fix the economy as if the pandemic doesn't exist. And what everyone has to understand is, until we address that, nothing is fixed.
And then even if you can get beyond the curve of the pandemic, the fact remains that California is on fire. And we might not be able to grow corn in southern Iowa in 25 years because of climate warming. So yeah, and you're right, they're all connected.
Well, and that's what's so interesting, is not only is he a pandemic denier, but he is a climate denier. And even when he tried to return, you know, all the coal miners to coal, everybody kind of looked at him and said, well, you can return them, but we're not buying the coal. I mean, it's like, right. That's the irony of all this. It's not a bunch of lefty and granola eaters that are not buying the coal. It's everybody else that's not buying the coal. So, you know, in a lot of ways, he is living in the 1950s. He's never moved beyond the 1950s. If I hear one more word about suburban women, I'm going to give him a knuckle sandwich, you know, because I am so insulted as to how he talks about us, as if, you know, we're Leave It to Beaver. This is the Donna Reed show he's still watching, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't live that way.
You're afraid that a black person will move in next door.
Oh, exactly right. Yeah. And I said this yesterday, and I'm going to say it again. I am so grateful to the NBA. I am so grateful to the sports teams who are really stepping up. And this is the most important time for them to step up, because they are revered and they are respected, and we know they're rich and we know they can buy anything. The one thing they can't buy is they can't change the color of their skin. And with Donald Trump in power, their children are vulnerable. No matter what gated community they live in, no matter what, you know, elite school they go to, no matter what kind of car they drive, they're still going to walk down the street and be black. And in Trump's America, they are now even more vulnerable. It's amazing, Art Cullen. I'm sorry. Your piece is absolutely remarkable. You are the editor of the Storm Lake Times in Northwest Iowa. How lucky Iowa is to have you there. You won the Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing on agriculture. You can tell as I read your piece, I could sort of smell it, feel it, and taste it. And you are the Guardian U.S. columnist and author of the book Storm Lake: Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland. So if you could do one thing, Art Cullen, to begin to repair, other than addressing the pandemic, for the place you love, for Iowa, what would you want to see happen to begin to help Iowa repair?
First of all, thank you for your very kind words. And second, the main thing that we need is to plant about 30% less corn. If we could do that, we could heal Iowa. Wow. We need to convert our agriculture in a fundamental way to get off this chemical Jones. We are at the end of a 50-year period of chemical agriculture that's exhausted itself. And it's exhausting our soil, it's poisoning our water. And if we planted 30% less corn, we could start to solve the climate crisis and restore rural Iowa.
I'm so glad I asked that question, Art Cullen. I would never in a million years have come up with that answer. But since you got the Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing on agriculture, I asked the exact right person to begin the conversation. Let's hope after the 2020 election, the election that may never end, an election that I'm just praying will give us some kind of closure, but I don't think it will, that people can hear you and recognize that the past isn't working anymore. And if you want to have a safe and secure future, you're going to have to do change, and change is hard. But we need a leader who can help us get to that change.
We can solve the climate crisis. We can through you with agriculture. We can do it.
I believe you. I believe you. Art Cullen, thank you so much. Keep writing that stuff at The Guardian, and I'm going to call you again. So I promise.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Arnie. You're welcome. This is the Wednesday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson and producer Fred Portnoy. We'll schmooze tomorrow. Ciao.